Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Real Sports, Real Guys Sports Talk Radio, where real guys talk real sports. Welcome to your neighborhood sports reporters. You got Devon, Marcus, and my man Ray on the line. And for the next hour, we're just going to be doing what we do to talk about sports. Welcome you all to come in on the conversation. And, you know, we're going to throw stuff just right in the middle of the table and talk about this NFL draft and what's going on in the draft. And my big thing I want to throw out first is this whole thing about morality that was out there in the draft. When Tebow was drafted, all you heard was, you know, he's a good guy. He's a leader. He does all this stuff. But I really could get a sense that he could play in the NFL. And nobody was talking about whether or not he could really – get it done. And in the first round, can you get somebody that really can't get it done? You have a lot of leaders in the locker room, but if he can't get it done, can you win? Can he be effective? So that kind of just throw it out there and disturbed what I was hearing. But we're going to throw a whole bunch up against the wall, and want to make sure I have my guys on the phone. Are you there, Ray? And you there, Marcus?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
All right. I'm here. So talk to me. What's going on with the draft, man?
Well, let me chime in real quick with this on the subject of Tim Tebow. Now, like I said, I get it. The kid's a great leader. He's a great person. He's done a lot. But so is Myron Rowe. And Myron Rowe didn't go until the sixth round. Okay. Now, in my opinion, Myron Rowe has an easier position to learn. And I mean, this kid's a Rhodes Scholar. He's talking about building hospitals and you know, impoverished third world countries. I mean, that if morals are at the forefront of what teams are looking for, then, you know, Myron Rowe is that dude. I mean, he's a guy that you want. You know, he's a guy that, you know, when I go back to work, I'm going to tell the kids that I work with about, look at this guy, okay? Not only is he the number one high school football player when he's in high school, he goes off to college and he says, I'm going to sit out a year. I'm going to go to Oxford, be a Rhodes Scholar. Then I'm going to come back after sitting a year out and still get drafted. You know, that to me, that's – but he got took in the sixth round. Now, I'm trying to understand how Tebow goes in the first round. And to me, those cats is on the same level as far as, you know, ability to do what they're going to need to do at the next level. They both got a bit of a learning curve because Rhodes sat out a year. And Tebow, I mean, he has to revamp pretty much his whole – everything that he's learned, he's going to have to relearn, you know.
Tebow's whole situation is that, he's not geared for the NFL. Everybody that you listen to and everybody that you have heard about Tebow is the fact that he's not NFL ready.
Right.
When you talk about the Rhodes Scholar, their criticism on him is that he did take a year off,
mm-hmm.
and that they question his heart, where his heart is. I find that to be silly.
Right.
But again, you know, anybody can question anything they want to. The fact is that if anybody had an opportunity to become a Rhodes Scholar, take a year off, they're certainly going to do it. This young man graduated in 2.5 years, so he could afford a year off.
Mm-hmm.
So that as far as the morality, again, you're talking about Tebow. Morality really didn't come into play until they started talking about Ben Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody was talking about morality 3 days before the draft. Nobody was saying that Tebow, you know, should be drafted because he's just a good guy. You know, they were talking about how he shouldn't get drafted because he's just not NFL ready.
Right. And so what you're saying is Tebow needs to send Big Ben a check.
A check, sure.
Big Ben needs 5-6% of that, because otherwise Tebow's not getting first-round money.
you got to remember, too, that Tebow was drafted by Denver, and Shanahan's not there anymore. So anything that Denver's doing right now is kind of suspect. They trade Cutler. They get rid of Marshall. And then they draft Tebow. So right now, if I'm a Denver fan, I'm hitting a panic button. I'm looking for my other team that I want to root for.
Yeah.
Because I'm not quite sure that Denver's actually trying to put a team out on the field.
Because, I mean, they got two Golden Boy, so-called Golden Boy quarterbacks in Quinn and now Tebow. And I doubt if either one of them beats out Cal Orton, who for some reason just can't get no respect in this league, man. Like, the kid, he wins games. He's a solid quarterback. He ain't flashy. He don't look good. He ain't sexy. He don't got sexy numbers. But the kid does he does what you ask him to do, as long as you don't ask him to do too much. He'll get the job done.
He looked better in Chicago with the running game, but I don't think he's going to look good in Denver. He may have caught some people by surprise last year, but he's not going to surprise anybody this year. And keep in mind too, Brandon Marshall made him look really good.
Yeah,
he looked really good. When you have a receiver that can shake people up and get into space, Orton had the luxury of having a real good receiver for the first time. So Orton is not that good. Denver is in trouble. And they're just not going to get better if they keep drafting the way they do.
Well, and the thing that you're hitting on with Ben and we all played sports, and we all had a guy on our team that if he wasn't playing sports, he would be somewhere else, locked up doing something.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody on your championship squad. Now you don't want people going out and doing crazy, but to play football, you got to be aggressive. You got to come at it. And so I'm still trying to figure out. I think everybody has to come in line, but I'm trying to figure out where at some point you got to make plays. You could be a great, hire the person for the director of community service, but at some point you got to be able to make some plays. And if you can't make plays in a pro locker room, no one's going to say anything to you. Right. They might let you handle the Easter fun, or they might let you handle some other stuff. But if you can't make plays on the field, all that other stuff doesn't matter.
And that's absolutely true. I mean, people understate the fact that Tebow was probably, in the last 10 years, probably one of the best college football players that have played college football. And that's why he had that impact that he had on his teammates in college, is because he was out there producing. He was out there making plays. Now he's going into a locker room with a bunch of great college football players who are now pros, and most of them are going to be outproducing him. So, I mean, what impact is that going to have in the locker room? You can't inspire me from the bench. Okay, you can't inspire me with a clipboard and a headset on.
And how did I just don't understand how I got drafted in the first round.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that Tebow was not as gifted a quarterback, in my opinion, is Charlie Ward.
Charlie Ward
couldn't
find
a team.
Or even Tommy Frazier.
He couldn't find a team. Randall Hill had the same kind of skill set. He could win games. He didn't get looked at as a quarterback in the NFL. Tebow, at best, is going to be a special teams player.
Yeah.
Somewhere on the special teams, you can find a spot for him. He's an athlete. Nobody's going to deny that. But I think,
as you were saying that, how is Tebow any different than the top wishbone quarterbacks back in the 70s and the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were on great teams. They dominated. They might have won a Heisman Trophy, but they didn't get drafted first round as quarterbacks.
No.
Right.
No, and the teams really wouldn't look at them.
No.
Again, how did he go in the first round?
If he didn't have
Charlie Ward talent, if he didn't have – I just don't understand it. So
we're dancing around it, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. Like, he's white, he's marketable,
right.
You know what I mean? And Denver needs an image makeover.
Sure.
Denver needs, because Cutler was brash. Cutler was arrogant. Cutler kind of rubbed people the wrong way. Marshall, arrogant, rubbed people the wrong way. They got rid of both of those dudes, and they're trying to build that. Josh McDaniels is trying to use that Belichick model and get good guys in, good versatile guys. And I think they allowed the fact that they've had this run of making some poor decisions and having some guys react in negative ways to this new regime. I think they let that really affect how they drafted And I think that's why they picked Tebow. It's because, one, they can throw him out there and market him, and he's positive, and he's going to be positive, and they know they can count on that. But I think it's a mass miscalculation from a football perspective.
But see, I would buy that if you didn't have somebody like McCoy sitting out there. If you didn't have some of those other quarterbacks sitting out there that could for the race that could play, who could give you an image makeover at the same way. Those players can play. I mean, when you have McCoy out there saying, "Well, I think the reason why," you know, he didn't even know what to say. He said, "Well, I think the reason why they took him is because they wanted a good guy." But who, I haven't heard anything that you weren't a good guy.
Yeah.
Plus, you threw for many yards. You in a league that could pass. I mean, no one's questioning. They might question your arm strength going downfield, but as far as accuracy and learning how to run the offense, I mean, they're not saying the same things about McCoy that they're saying about Tebow at all. That part I don't quite understand. And the things they are saying
about Tebow is that he doesn't have the mechanics.
Yeah.
That he's not an NFL quarterback. And
he's not accurate. And now in this league nowadays, you have to be accurate more than have arm strength. You have to be accurate more. It's more about accuracy than arm strength right now. And it's not a big difference between which one is more important, but you have to be accurate in this NFL. The way teams are passing and the way now defenses are there's smaller windows to pass into with defenses. You have to be accurate to be successful. I mean, that's why Marcus Russell is terrible. Dude's got an arm. He could throw it through a wall, you know. But if you ever watched the Raiders play, he couldn't throw it through the goalpost.
But again, you know, he had the skill set. He had the skill set. Nobody talked about Jamarcus Russell's skill set. Everybody knew Jamarcus Russell was going to be the first quarterback taken in that draft.
Mm-hmm.
There was no question about that. Tebow, they didn't even talk about him being in the first round.
Yeah.
They didn't get him confused with a real quarterback.
No.
They didn't get him confused with a real quarterback. Now, again, they said that, you know, one of the reasons they drafted him was because he's a good guy. That's not going to matter in Denver when they're, you know, 3-16, or not 3-16, you know, 2-13. That's not going to matter. It's not going to matter. With the players that they've lost, they did not cover the ground.
No.
And Tebow was one of those draft picks. You know, that new regime in Denver had to hit a home run, and they bunted. They bunted, and it's going to cost them, you know.
Yeah.
You look at the first, you know, 24 draft picks, and every one of those draft picks is going to make a difference on that team. Tebow is not going to be the best quarterback on Denver this year. He's probably not going to be the best quarterback on Denver in the next 3 years. So,
and that's really what's crazy about it is that they wasted a first round pick on a guy who, even if he does go in there and bust his tail, at the end of the day he still may not be very good.
Right.
You know, like he has a tremendous amount of ups. Nobody's talking about his upside. Nobody's saying this kid figures it out. He's gonna be an unbelievable quarterback like we've never seen before. Nobody's saying that about Tim Tebow. What they're saying is this kid has a lot of work. He's a project just to be functional. He's a project just to get him to a point where he can be functional and look like an NFL quarterback. He is a project. And it's not saying that he's a project, and if you can get him right, you have one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. No, if you get him right, you can put him on the field. And to me, that's ridiculous.
And then, Marcus, you said something earlier, because everyone keeps talking about this Belichick, and sometimes I think it's a misrepresentation. Belichick gets good players who are smart.
Right.
That's what he does. Right. He gets good. So the key is he gets good players who are also smart. So everybody talks about, well, Belichick gets these stand-up guys going to fall in line. No, he gets good players who are smart. They do a good job of scouting, and they find guys who first can play, but also are smart because they do a lot of multiple. They need people who can change in the middle of a week, who can think on a dime, but who are also good players. And I think, so every time I hear people say, you know, McDaniels is trying to do it the Belichick in a way, well, that's, you know, I'm not quite seeing that he's getting good players who are smart. He might be getting some smart players he's adding the whole morality piece onto it, but he's not getting, when you talk about the player, I mean,
the other thing you're talking about is Belichick, though. Belichick in himself is a better coach. He's a better teacher.
Exactly. And
he can take a smart athlete and get him to perform the way that he needs him to perform. Denver hasn't proven, you know, the whole coaching staff in Denver is suspect. And,
yeah.
and now, you know, the GM has to be suspect. Denver's in trouble.
Yeah.
And they're not, they're just not going to be a good team, you know.
Well, I know, I know that's not going to be solved, but I do want to make sure we cover a couple other things that y'all had on your mind to kind of to shift over.
Well, one other thing about the draft that I wanted to touch on is, did anybody catch the cat Taylor Mays and how he went at Pete Carroll for not picking him?
Right, right. And
he
was right, but he was right for going after it, but he
right.
ends up in a good spot.
Yeah.
He ends up in a good spot.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll sold him down the river.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll told him to come back and you'll be better next year.
Yeah.
You know, Pete Carroll brought him back. He should have left last year. He was a
mm-hmm.
top 10 pick. He was a top 10 pick. Pete Carroll said, come on back and you'll be fine. And when then when he came back, of course, you know, he wasn't fine. They changed the defense to the talent they had and he got lost. And
yeah.
he didn't have as good a year. Pete Carroll sold him down the river and then didn't draft him. To overlook him, you know. Granted, the player that Pete Carroll took, everybody's, you know, nobody questioned that. That player is the real deal.
Yeah. And see, this is one of the things that, you know, I work in education, and I'm a big proponent of education. I believe in education. But when it comes to athletes who have an opportunity to go pro, go, okay? John Wall, go. You know, Sam Bradford should have went last year. Okay, yeah, he made his money back. He went number one. But he took a huge risk and a huge gamble. You know,
sure.
with your body, once you hit 21, the clock is ticking. Okay, the clock starts ticking. Physically, you're not going to develop that much more from that point. And at that point, you need to, with sports, you got, if you're lucky, you know, everybody ain't Brett Favre where you can play into your 40s. Okay, if you're lucky, you can go to your 30. You know what I mean? And that clock starts ticking. Why don't you start getting paid? Get paid, and if you value education, you can pay your way to go back. Okay, you can pay your own way to go back. Go back on your own dime. But your body is something that's going
to
deteriorate.
Pete Carroll brought him back to make his team better. That's the only reason.
He
wasn't thinking about the young man. He was thinking about
not at all. And that's my problem.
You know, if he were more saint-like, if he were more saintly and said, look, I really think that you need to develop as a person. You need another year of education. You don't necessarily have the maturity to play in the NFL right now. I want you to think about coming back to school for your sake. Nobody would say a thing. But Pete Carroll, you know, hindsight being 2020, Pete Carroll brought him back because he knew that defense wasn't going to be that good. And if this young man left, it was going to be even worse.
Yeah.
He knew that he wouldn't end up in Seattle or anywhere else. You know, if he didn't have, you know, some of these young players back with him. You know, he takes Earl Thomas in the 14th round, or as the 14th pick. Everybody knows, you know, everybody said Earl Thomas was the better player.
Mm-hmm.
But if Pete Carroll wanted to pay back this young man for what he did for him, he should have drafted him right there. He should have took him.
And I was thinking about it too. Is like, okay, if I'm you know, when after my 4 years at Beloit, you know, if Sisu then gets a job with a pro team, and I'm a prospect worthy of being picked, and then he passes me over.
Sure.
How would I respond to that? And, you know, that was the thought process when I was thinking about that. Like, how would I feel about that if my college coach had an opportunity to pick me and he picked a player who plays the same position as I do over me? You know, like, I just gave this man 4 years.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And he saw
me every day for 4 years.
But I'm looking at that a different way. See, this is where young people got to be. They have to be able to think. They have to have good advisors around them. That's why Sanchez left. Kara was mad at the press conference. Sanchez was like, I got to go where I fit in. He obviously had some people around him who knew, and Carroll basically said he wasn't going to have a good rookie year. He had a pretty good rookie year. And I think part of it is, you know, and it's going to be brash, but Carroll didn't really owe him anything.
Mm-hmm.
When he got to Seattle, he had to look at his team. And let's say he had them both on the board at the same spot.
But he did. That's exactly what happened.
But what he needed because of the skill set, they both have different kind of skill sets. And what he needs in that defense, sitting there looking at that, you know, he needs somebody who's a safety who can cover really well, right? So because
right.
Thomas is one of the best, he's one of the best cover guys as well. So he could have been one of the best corners. So he's got a guy who's versatile versus Mays, who doesn't really have a good reputation for being able to cover. He's big, he can play up the line, but that's not what he needs at that safety position.
Mays was supposed to be a top 10 pick last year, and Carroll brought him back. He knows exactly who he is. He's been with him. He coached him for 4 years. We'll see. The proof will be in the pudding. If Earl Thomas is a good interviewer,
he was also probably the best corner.
He was a second corner taken.
But the thing about it is, we were just saying that the league has shown more yards, more touchdowns. We've had more offense. I need a safety who can also cover. If you think about the great safeties in the league, like Polamalu and some of these cats, they can cover as well as climb up on the run. Mays has not demonstrated that he can cover and play in space, and you know, he can come up on the run, but then he's like Williams, you know, who they used to have at Dallas. You know, if you can't cover in space, then you're a liability. Now, I love you, but again, I got to be here for 3 or 4 years. I love you. Now, what he could have done is he could have talked him up a little bit, you know.
Could he talked him up a bit, but he could have told him. He could have told him last year. When you come back, this is what you got to work on if you're going to play in the NFL.
Right.
He didn't tell him that. What he did was he brought Mays back and took him out of his position. He brought Mays back and put a defense built around the talent that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody said Mays was a top 10 pick last year. I didn't get a chance to see him play. But the fact of the matter is, everybody said he would have gone in that first round, and he would have been a top 10 pick. Now, here he is. So you as the coach, you tell me, oh, you should come back. You should come back. What am I coming back for? If the only lesson to be learned is for every one of these young players to realize that you might get Pete Carroll next year.
Yep.
If you didn't come into the draft this year, let Mays be your lesson.
Yep. That's my point, if you're a top ten pick, go. Go.
Right. If you didn't put yourself in that draft this year, you got to be nervous.
Yeah. Mays cover last year? He was a top 10 pick last year. He could cover last year. Now this year he can't cover?
This year, if you put him up against Thomas, he can't cover like him.
That's true, but I mean, it was like 3 or 4 safeties that was taken before him. So it wasn't just like Thomas and who was the other safety that went early? Barry. It wasn't just those two were better than him. The league just said, okay, you know, this kid was a top. We would have taken this kid in the top 10 last year had he come out, but this year all of a sudden he's, where did he get picked, in the second or third round?
Because the pool last year was probably not as strong as, it wasn't as strong as the pool this year.
But also think about it this way. How do you know that all them other NFL teams that wanted a safety passed over on Mays and took a different player, took another player, thinking, hell, if Pete Carroll don't want him, we don't want him.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with Clawson. Charlie Weiss is the coordinator at Kansas City, and they get up in the second round, and they take somebody else. I'm looking, if I'm another GM, I'm like, okay, his college coach don't even want him. You know, the guy that didn't groom this cat to supposedly be a pro quarterback, you know, who is now the offensive coordinator, and he's not really interested in working with this young man.
You know, and did they do it for a reason? Did Pete Carroll decide if I pass on him here, maybe I can get him in that second round too? If I get enough people believing that I don't believe in him, they got to drop him down on their draft boards too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did he set the boy up for failure like that? And there was a lot of surprises, you know, a lot more surprises in this draft than what people want to talk about. You know,
yeah.
I did especially in those first couple rounds, some of those teams took players that they weren't even the best talent available. You know,
yeah.
A lot of teams filled holes, a lot of teams did really well, but a lot of teams, you just sit back and go, what the hell were they thinking? the Bears had a terrible draft. For all that they did in the offseason to get players, for all the holes that they filled, they had a terrible draft. And I think that this draft will cost Lovie Smith his job. They're not going to do much more than they did last year.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I think hiring Mike Martz made it cost Lovie his job because, you know, Mike Martz has a system that
bad science.
It worked in St. Louis. It worked when you're in the dome and there's no wind and it's not cold. It worked. And when you're playing in division with other teams who are warm weather, playing in domes,
The other side of that was that Lovie wasn't.
I don't see that working in Chicago.
Lovie
in December
Lovie
in Chicago, you ain't going to chuck the rock 40 times a game.
Lovie wasn't the boss in St. Louis. He had his little clique. This is my defense. I'll run it. You run the offense. I'll run the defense. This is Lovie's job.
Yeah.
And even in, you know, and this is so away from Lovie Smith. This is so far removed from Lovie Smith. He's a smash mouth coach. He's not going to like any of this.
And honestly, Martz's style isn't conducive to defense. I mean, you get out on the field and you got a 3-minute drive, and then the defense is back on the field. I mean, that's why the Rams' defenses were so easy to score on is because they was out there so much. And everywhere Martz is gone, his defense has gotten taken advantage of because they out there so much. He doesn't run the ball enough.
But the other side of that, too, is that Chicago doesn't have the talent to run Martz's offense.
Exactly.
You know, they had some receivers in St. Louis. You know, he created situations for those guys. Those guys, you know, they blossomed under him because of the way they ran that offense.
Mm-hmm.
They had the young man from that was a rookie last year. Otherwise, they got special team players out there trying to be receivers. Isaac Bruce was a special team player.
Yeah,
you know, it's insane what some of these teams are doing to try to win football games.
Well, part of it is if you look at all the great teams, they all have a philosophy.
Yep.
Right. You know what it is, and so mm-hmm. all these teams we're talking about, you know, if I'm the GM from Chicago, I'm in Chicago. I had a philosophy. My philosophy is probably similar to the Steelers. We're gonna run the football. We're gonna play defense. And we're gonna bust your will. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we got coaches who do that. We got a defense set up that. We got backs. We running backs. And your job as a quarterback is to make plays at key moments. But you don't see the philosophy. There's no philosophy to some of these teams we're talking about.
Right.
Like you said, okay, what are they? And you can't tell me. You know
right.
what Indianapolis is. You know what the Ravens are. You know what some of these teams are. You can, when you say their name, you got the image.
Right. But
when you say Denver, I'm like, okay. You say Chicago, I'm going, okay. You say Houston, I'm like, okay, they're kind of getting something. When you say some of these teams, you can't really name their philosophy like you can
right.
some of the top teams.
Right. You know, exactly. And you know who I think is taking steps to becoming something? I like what the Lions did this year
yep.
in the draft and in free agency because they really focused on the cats that play in the trench. You know, they focused on the O-line and the defensive line. And for that team, you know, I think they're gonna be a tough, tough team this year. They're not gonna win. They're not gonna make the playoffs, but I think they're gonna take a big step. And I think in 2 or 3 years, you know, that Lions team is gonna be tough if Stafford continues to develop. I like the kid that they got from California, the running back Best. If he could stay healthy, he's going to be a nice change of pace back if Smith comes back from his knee injury. And, you know, and the Johnson kid at receiver is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, and now they've picked up some players on the defensive line who are going to allow them to stop the run better than they have in the past. I like a lot of what Detroit – I like Detroit's draft. I like what they've done. I think they're starting to establish an identity. And I like Schwartz, the coach from Tennessee. I feel like I think he's a solid coach, and I think he's gonna help turn that program around. And Matt Millen is gone. So, you know, they didn't take a receiver, you know, in the first round this year. So, you know, I think things are looking up in Detroit. But I think Detroit is starting to figure that out, that they have to have a philosophy, you know, and you got to stick with that.
Well, I would say, you know, I would say it's the old Jim Finks, you know, great executive. You know, he was with the Bears. You know, you start with both sides of the line. If you control, the line of scrimmage, you control the game, right? A lot of those teams don't get it. So that's what Matt Millen, I was like, what are you doing? He started with both sides of the line, but near the sideline.
You
can't win if you can't control the line of scrimmage. They get that now. It took them a while, but they get the fact that we got to control the line of scrimmage.
Well, that, and they do have some, you know, parts of the puzzle together. What happened with you know, the old regime in Detroit was that every year they were drafting the best receiver, and they never had a quarterback to throw the ball.
Exactly.
So they're concentrating on one area, and you know, they never had the talent to utilize the players they would draft. Now with the young quarterback, they've got some receivers, but they also got a running game. So, you know, to concentrate on the trenches was a smart move on their part. I mean, that's exactly what they had to do. But, you know, if you look at, you know, all of these teams, you know, when you look at some of the first, you know, 10 picks, all of the holes that were filled on a lot of these teams. I think Detroit, they obviously are going to be better, and they need to be. I mean, they couldn't be much worse. But, you know, you don't get the second pick in the draft without you know, being a poor team. And, you know, and that kid from Nebraska is a monster. I mean, he could have easily gone to the Rams.
I was going to say, you know, because we got a little time here, I was intrigued because we had an earlier, and this might be a shift of gears a little bit, but, you know, Marcus, you raised this whole thing about, and this is, again, about how people treat players. You talked about Brandon Roy when we were kind of off air a little bit. And just, and this is back, I guess, you know, Taylor Mays and stuff, you know how we treat our players and the role in making the decision shortly after surgery to play a player. And it kind of gives you some insight into how do people think about these athletes. And I know you raised some really good issues about that, so I want to throw that in the middle of the table, you know, with some of the time we have left. But I think it's this kind of line we've been talking about this morning is, you know, in terms about players, what, you know, how are these organizations thinking about their talent?
Right, right. And in the Brandon Roy situation, like I said, what really kind of struck me about the situation is that the fact that he was on the court, to me, was a failure of management. Because as a player, he's supposed to want to play. All right, that's what he gets paid to do. He gets paid to play. He don't get paid to sit on a bench in a nice suit. He gets paid to get out there and put the ball in the hole and play defense and contribute. So he's gonna want to get out on the court, and that's the mentality I had. And I'm sure when y'all played, that was the mentality y'all had. Was that, look, okay, if I feel healthy, I want to get out on the court. Now it's the trainer's job. It's the coach's job. It's the GM's job to step in and say, well, you know, let's look at this big picture, okay? Your job is to look at it from game to game, from play to play. That's how we want you to be thinking as an athlete. But it's our job as the architects of this whole situation to be looking at it from a long-term standpoint. You know, you brought up the point that, okay, look, you got a five-year deal, okay? Your deal doesn't come up when your deal doesn't expire when we beat the Suns, okay? So if your knee is jacked up, then you need to sit down. We already got one cat with two bad knees in Oden. The last thing we need is our other young stud to have a knee problem. And it's your knees. Like, you know, anybody that's ever played any sport will tell you, you don't mess with your knees. Like, your knees get messed up. You can let that bad boy rest.
There isn't a player out there that's going to throw in the towel.
Exactly.
They just won't do it.
Exactly.
They won't do it. And if you watch the game and you watch how uplifting the other players were when he did go to the scorer's table and get put into the game, all the other players, it boosted. They played a great game last night.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it showed signs of weakness as an organization and as a management team to allow him to even get out on the court. And
absolutely,
because you know, he dictated what was going to happen. He's calling the coach all week and saying, look, I can play, I can play, I can play. And somebody needed to say, okay, that's great. I'm glad you can play. I'm glad you have that kind of enthusiasm. But, you know, what are we really trying to do here? You know, where are we really going with this? You know, the young man is still injured. He's not recovered. It's 8 days
right
after surgery. He's not ready to play. He's not ready to go out there in the playoffs. He's not. This isn't a poo butt team.
Exactly.
You know, this is the Suns. They got some healthy guys. They got some
right
good guys.
Right.
So you're right. Management should have just pulled this young man aside and said, "Look, we appreciate what you're trying to do, but the fact of the matter is, we have to be pleased with what we've done this year."
Right.
Because if we continue to try to go to the next level, and our pieces of our puzzle keep falling to the side, we're going to look foolish that way.
Yep.
You know, it's much like when Peyton Manning got pulled out of the game.
Yeah.
Everybody criticized it. Of course Peyton Manning's angry. It's like when Brett Favre got pulled out of the game.
Right.
He was getting hit.
Everybody was to be angry. You were playing.
He was getting hit. You know, the coach wanted to pull him out, and he did pull him out because he got hit. You know, and then that's what he's supposed to do. I got an old man out there. You know, I need him next week. And that's what they need to be telling Brandon Roy. We need you next year.
Exactly.
If we can get Odin back with Aldridge and Roy, that's a team to contend with. A
right.
Nice young team to contend with for years to come.
Right.
But if we get him messed up now, if he should ruin that knee. You know, we don't have that.
Exactly.
I mean, we can't trade it. Exactly. We can't do anything about it. We don't have it.
Right. Then you got a situation where you're looking at a player where he in 3 years he's at T-Max level, where
right.
he's so broken that nobody wants to mess with him, that
right.
you couldn't trade him, you know, for a pack of cigarettes.
No, but see that's the weakness of that coach. That's the weakness of that, you know. And they in the interview they talked. The coach talked about talking to the owner. You know, they had a conversation. Should we really do this? Two of them, the owner and the coach, are having a
right.
conversation.
And
one of them,
how they can walk away from that conversation and feel like it was a good decision to play it. You're not winning the championship this year.
No.
That's what they need to be focused on, because you have the pieces to begin to move in that direction. So why would you put one of your key pieces at anything less than 100% out into a series where even if y'all win it, y'all are not going to the title, and y'all not winning the title this year. So,
and what would have happened if he would have said, if Roy would have said he didn't want to play? You think that the
mm-hmm.
coach and the owner would have got together and said, "Look, from what the doctor said, you can play.
Mm-hmm.
You get out there and play." You know, everybody in the world would have been all over that. Would have
yeah.
been saying, "Look, you can't do that. If this young man says he can't play, he can't play."
Right.
It's the same thing on the other side. Just because that young man said he could play doesn't mean that, you know, you go against the advice of any of your doctors. There couldn't be a doctor out there that says, you know, he should play or he could play or he's not going to harm himself if he does play.
Eight days after surgery?
and on
the medical? Come on, now.
The killer about that is they've got through the season overcoming all kinds of injuries.
Right.
With different people.
Right.
So this is one team that's proven, even when they've had all these cats injured, they found a way to win. So that
yeah,
right there, it wasn't like they hadn't proven it.
And so, you know, it's just like, let the situation play itself out.
Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing that Brandon Roy can say is that when he came into the ball game, you know, they whooped their tail.
Yeah. And I mean,
you don't
fault Brandon Roy in this situation. Again, he's a ball player. If that scenario played out as you posted, Ray, where he said, well, you can play, and he said, I don't want to play, that's a guy you might not want on your team.
Right.
You know what I mean? If he doesn't want to play, you know, then you kind of say, okay, your knee's not right, but, you know, I would rather have a guy who wants to go. I'm not saying that a guy who doesn't want to go in that situation isn't necessarily doesn't have the mentality, but you want that guy who's like, I want to get out there and play. I want to get out there on the court. I don't care if my knee's not right or not. I want to get out there and play and help my team. You want that guy, you know, and you want him to be that way. But again, as management, you have to be like, look, man, like, we are not whole right now. we are not whole right now. And by you coming out there, you're not improving our chances of winning the title this year at all with you coming out there. And actually, long time, you're probably hurting our chances of winning the title by coming out there right now. And
you know, he played 26 minutes last night. Eight days after surgery, you know, when they interviewed those boys after the game, you know, the one thing that LaMarcus Aldridge did say, you know, was that that first pass that he made, you know, and the shot that he took as soon after Brandon Roy got in there was the first time that he had a shot that he wasn't double teamed, though, you know. So Brandon Roy made a difference in that game.
Absolutely.
He's not going to make a difference in the series. He's not going to make a difference in the overall. He shouldn't have played.
Right.
And if he's not mature enough to know that, you know, that's what you have a coach, that's what you have a GM, that's what you have an owner for.
Right.
That's
what you're paying management to do. Management needs to sit them down and say, we get it. You want to play. We get it. But long term, this isn't the best thing for us to do. You know, this isn't the best thing for you. This isn't the best thing for the franchise.
So when we start thinking about the basketball and what's happening in the NBA, you know, so many storylines are playing out. Looking on the bench, and Kobe was like, he went to the witness protection program. I'm like, where's Waldo? Where's Kobe? They back in the locker room getting a back massage. I'm like, is it my brain headache? Where's Scottie?
When was the last time the Lakers scored that few points in a ball game? You know, if you watch that game, you know, there was 10 minutes left. That game was over.
Yeah.
That game was absolutely over. They were bringing in guys I didn't even know. I didn't know the Lakers had so many young white boys on their team. I don't know where they came from. I don't know how they got out there. But when you start pulling out guys, you know, that was selling popcorn 10 minutes ago, you know, you gave up. You gave up. And you leave it to Phil to do that. It made sense. The game was over. I don't care who you would have put in at that point. But I, you know, these are Lakers that I didn't even know were there.
Yeah.
The game was over. And Kobe, he left the court. I don't know what was wrong with his ass, but he left the court. And I think it was more, you know, like you say, the witness protection program, he was trying to find a place to hide. And the only thing that he could really say afterwards was that, you know, it was what it was, you know. They got beat.
And the move that Durant put on Artest when he crossed him over, went down the middle lane and dunked, that right there told him that tonight this young boy is gonna serve you up right now.
Yeah.
But his face was like, what did this young boy just do to me?
Yeah, but see, that's, you know, what he did to, you know, what he did, what Durant did to Kobe. Kobe shot 10 times. He didn't shoot the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
The whole first quarter. You know, and later, you know, later in the interview, Kobe said, well, you know, that was the way I was trying to run the game or manage the game. How can that be? You know, Phil should have called the timeout. They shouldn't be allowed to, you know, Kobe, you got to shoot. I don't know what you're trying to do or what you think you're going to, you know, accomplish.
Yeah.
It was just pathetic.
Yeah.
And it felt like, you know, that the first time that Apollo Creed realized he was in a fight. You know, it was like, this boy ain't going away. I can't hit him with his left hand, and he ain't going nowhere.
Yep.
And them young boys are just like, we're here. This ain't no joke. And I don't know what adjustments they can make. I'm not saying that the Lakers aren't going to win in seven or what, but they got it. It wasn't like, okay, these cats just beat us and we just went on our game tonight. It was like these cats are playing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just Kobe either. It wasn't just, you know, the reality of this series and these four games is the fact that, you know, whoever has gotten the most out of their bench has won the ball game.
Yeah, and that's the way it always is in the playoffs.
Sure, what happens is when you have a guy like Durant that gets off, everybody on their bench is enthusiastic. They
mm-hmm.
realize we can do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not being put in this game just to fill minutes. You know, them guys come in there with a purpose, and they come out there to play. And I mean, you couldn't have told me that the Lakers would have been routed, even with the injuries that they had, with the setbacks that they've seen. To tell me that Kobe would have shot the ball 10 times in a ball game. It's a testament to what Oklahoma did to him. I mean, they did it to him. It wasn't like they didn't go after him.
And what I do want to say to people out there, if you're listening, that if you want to join this conversation, you can join it by calling 1-347-989-0844. That's 1-347-989-0844. We always want to have you join the conversation, hear from you as well in this conversation. So as we go back and kind of hit Kobe on his last 15, 14 minutes of the show, I want to make sure people know they can always join us on the air. But what if you feel, I was going to throw this back up, if you feel and what do you say, not to Kobe, because you don't worry about Kobe, he's going to take care of himself. What do you say to some of these other cats? I mean, to Ron Artest, Ron ain't going to get any younger, right? You see this cat in front of him about 16, got handles. What do you say to these cats to get them? You know, it's like being at the park. All you can do is look to the sidelines and say, can I get some help? You know, we might see some bad boy type stuff come out.
after last night, though, I disagree with you. After last night and the way they got their tail whipped, I think you go right after Kobe. You go right after Kobe because the other egos are a little bit too fragile to brew.
Right, right.
You go right to Kobe, and even if you have to go to Kobe and say, look, when we get out here on this court today, when we run this little shoot-around, this practice, I'm jumping your ass.
Yeah.
I got to jump on you a little bit. I don't mean to make an example out of you, but you had a terrible game.
Yeah.
And if I can't tell you had a terrible game, I can't tell any of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start with you so that I can talk to every one of you.
Yeah.
Because if you play like this again when we get back home, it's going to be short. It's going to be short. I don't want to lose in L.A. and then have to go back to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Because we won't come out of there, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So I disagree. You don't have to say anything to Kobe. He should know. But the fact of the matter is that's where I start. And I let him know, I wasn't happy. I'm not happy with the way you played. 10 shots?
I was the other night when they played game 3 during halftime, I was watching and I was listening to, it was on TNT, so I was listening to, C-Web and EJ and Kenny and Charles talk about how the first half was going. And Kenny got to the point where he was ready to say Kobe was the best player in the NBA because of the fact that they had – because the Bulls had beat the Cavs earlier that night.
Right.
And so Kenny was using that game with the Bulls in the first half of that L.A.-Oklahoma game to say that Kobe had that killer instinct that LeBron and the Cavs don't have. And, it would be interesting to see what Kenny has to say now given that – Oklahoma City didn't put it on the Lakers for 2 straight, I mean, but they were really talking about that killer instinct that Kobe has, and he doesn't seem he didn't display that last night. He didn't display that last night at all. And in game 3, if this game had, if you had told me before this series that this game would go beyond 5, that this series would go beyond 5, I would have been really surprised. We would have had to have a conversation about that and why the game was going to go beyond 5 games.
I think part of that, though, too, Marcus, was the fact that L.A. thought it was going to go 4. L.A.
Mm-hmm.
thought. They looked past this team. They looked past these young boys. And Durant and Westbrook, these last 2 games, they just stood in there and slapped them. They just said, here, it ain't going to turn out like you think,
Yeah.
And they just went right after. Durant only shot the ball 12 times last night, but he went to the free throw line. He was going to the free throw line. He's playing good defense.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe, after that first quarter where he didn't do anything, he just never did anything for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
And then he left in the fourth quarter because the game was over.
Mm-hmm.
And And so, you know, Phil, I don't know what kind of books Phil has to hand out for that kind of stuff. You know? What do you tell him?
How to get your ass whipped.
Right,
they got a book on the wire, you know. You might have to call somebody from, you know, Marlowe or somebody.
For real.
You know, call that Spirit of Marlowe. Somebody got to get cut.
They weren't following anybody. You know, they weren't giving out good fouls. They were just stagnant. And come on, these are the world champions.
Well, what worries me about the whole situation is that these are the champs. They should understand what the playoffs are all about.
Exactly.
And you don't give up two games to a young team.
Right. You don't lose two games in a row. So, I mean, it's. You know, and now they got to be worried about going home and getting beat, because the last thing you want to do with a young man like Durant is give him a belief. They believe now.
Yeah,
they believe.
Yep.
But Ray, you hit the thing right on the head. There's a hidden number there. You know, so in terms of field goals, they're not much different between field goals that they shot.
Yeah.
But in terms of free throws,
sure.
You know, where they really killed them was they went to the line more. I don't see cats like Harden and those guys and all these folks going to the line at the rate that they did in Oklahoma City. That's the difference. Can these kids continue to get to the free throw line in L.A.?
Yeah, they shot 48 free throws last night. That's actually quite a few free throws.
Right. That's a lot of free throws.
But again, the free throws that they shot were simply because, you know, the fouls that L.A. were given last night were frustration fouls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be even worse. Maybe they only get half as many free throws in L.A. But if they're on the backside of a 3-point play, you know, last night they just the L.A. was just flat. They looked terrible. They didn't play a good ball game. The whole team, you know, nobody scored more than 13 points.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. This is L.A. This is the best team in the NBA, supposedly, and nobody scored, you know, more than 13 points. And you just they're not going to win. These young guys aren't going away. They're not going to go away. So, I mean, you know, the Oklahoma had dudes, you know, coming off the bench. You know, Harden, Maynard, you know, those guys, they scored as many as any of the Lakers.
Yeah.
So I mean. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And to me, if nothing else, you know, somebody on LA should have fouled out. You know, somebody on LA.
Yeah, I dig that.
That's what's about to kill me. What happens to the bad boy? At some point, young boy, you come through the lane, you get fouled.
Right.
I mean,
you can't do that in the NBA no more.
But
you can't do that in the league no more.
But you
they won't let you do that. Stern is too worried about image and all that stuff. Like the enforcer, that enforcer power forward that used to exist in the early 90s, late 80s, that is an extinct type of player now.
At the end of that game, you had Little Charles from East Tennessee State on the court. If he lose money, he lose money. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It wasn't like you're gonna have, you know, Artest and one of those cats, your top eight foul. But at the end of the game, like Ray said, they had the ball boy. He's like, you gonna play point tonight? You know the triangle. You know he put the ball boy on the court. So the ball boy hard foul.
Yeah.
And if I'm Phil, I'm like, I'm paying you fine. Don't worry about it. I'm gonna transfer this stuff to PayPal and you'll get your money. But the rat comes to the hole. He going in the first row.
Yeah.
But again, you know, when somebody got beat, and let's face it, when Durant goes by somebody got beat. The next guy up, if he can't stop him from going to that cup, you got to knock him down.
Yeah.
And so maybe you aren't guarding him, but you still fall out because four of your fouls were against him. You can't just let him keep going. You can't do it in L.A.
Yeah, Durant shot 11 free throws. They might have been fouled.
you can foul him without drawing blood. See, that's the thing. You can foul him and not draw that blood, but you got to foul him.
He was dunking on him. That's the thing.
He was dunking on him.
You know, I would have fouled him pretty hard.
But, I mean, Oklahoma City also had 24 fast break points. So,
right.
I mean,
right.
You know, that's a lot of points, fast break points. You know, that's 12 baskets that you got in transition. And, I mean, that's just a sign that they got ran.
Yeah. Guys are not getting back. They're not rotating. Somebody's not covering. You know, yeah, they're none of it. And the Lakers, even though they picked the defense up last year, they still, and they picked it up this year a little bit, they still break down. They still show those glimpses of 2 years ago. Pau Gasol is still not going to be physical. And, you know, they don't have guys who, and they don't have those, other than Kobe, those guys in our test that you just say are going to respond physically.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think they got lucky last year and they just ran into a softer team in the finals. Cause,
that's right.
I think Orlando is soft. And the Lakers just happened to be tougher than a soft team last year.
you don't put Orlando out there, that's big fella.
You might be right, and that's why they went out and got Ron Artest, thinking that, you know, he's a modern day Dennis Rodman. But you gotta, last night the best Laker on the court was buying them, and you're never gonna win a championship when the best team. Player on your team is Bynum. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah, not at this point in Bynum's career. No.
Yeah, he's got to be more consistent.
No.
So that.
I mean, they didn't play well last night. It'll be different in LA. We'll see. You know.
I think it will be different. I think part of it too is that young players and role players always play better at home. You know, and so some of the Laker role players are gonna play better, and the Thunder role players probably won't play as well. I can't imagine Harden and Maynard having as good a games as they had last night in L.A. And you would expect, Kobe probably going to be pissed, and Kobe usually plays pretty well when he's pissed.
He'll be shooting in that first quarter.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be tough. If Kobe doesn't put up 20 shots, then something's wrong.
Right.
Something's wrong in L.A.
Well, and then you blame him and Phil.
Yeah.
Because if Kobe doesn't shoot the first five shots that he has an opportunity to shoot, then if Phil ain't sitting him down,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to sit him down.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be looking at him like, don't think I won't sit you down.
Right.
Ooh, old Phil got to raise it up. He gonna try to sit down. My boys who like the Lakers, they call him Jack Bauer. They call him Jack Bauer. They say Jack Bauer will be back.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 24. But as we roll up here on some final thoughts, we got a lot going on, in sports, and we covered a lot this over this hour. We're gonna have some stuff that we're gonna kind of tease folks when we come back next Sunday at 10 o'clock at this time, and folks can join us. But any final thoughts that y'all want to throw out there about what's been going on before we get back together again next week?
Well, I'm anxious to see Roethlisberger's interview. I want to see what he's going to say about a six-game suspension and how he's going to address that. Because I have a feeling that he's just, you know, he is going to roll over and take it, thinking that, you know, that might keep him in Pittsburgh, that might, prolong his career there. And I don't see it. I see Pittsburgh try to shop him. It's going to hurt.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing how some of these series wrap up. I'm interested to see if Cleveland can reassert themselves and really put it on the Bulls and put the Bulls in their place right now, and to see how the Lakers respond to the Thunder, their unwillingness to let this be a quick series for the Lakers. So it'll be interesting to see how these things play out and how the rest of these playoffs continue to develop. So that's one thing I'll be looking forward to this coming weekend and looking into.
And I'm interested in if Mel Kiper Jr.'s hair will change this week. If somebody will come up with some new hairstyle for his butt for next year. Because I couldn't even think about the picks. Because every time I looked at that hairdo, I thought, Peter's got to be there on the road. They got to be. And we are going to light it off here, y'all. Thanks for joining us this way. We'll see you next year, next week, next something, whatever. Come back to the show. Real guys. We're off, guys.
All right.
I like the 90 seconds, 60 seconds. That works.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah.
Well, first show, it is what it is.
Yeah.
We'll put it in the can and let it go. You know, next week we'll load up and try it again, and hopefully we'll get some, have a better feel.
Yeah.
Of how.